afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cedarstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, I think I am, Alfred Adesk. Are you there, Al?
Yeah, I'm close
there?
By.
Yeah, you're
I'm not
there.
Actually there, but I'm kind of close by.
And we're going to bring you our opinion and our commentary on today's economic and political events. And it's Tuesday, September 12th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Good afternoon, Melody.
As I was listening to the open, you know, I get a lot of comments. It's like, well, you know, your opening song is awfully long. You should probably cut it a little bit. And I'm thinking to myself, well, no, that's when Al and I get to talk. So we're talking when that is usually being played. So, but anyway, I guess it did seem a little long today because we were early for once, Alfred.
Well, we'll make up for it tomorrow.
Are we going to make up for it tomorrow?
Okay. Either that or we could make up it. Make
we
up
can
for
quit
it
early.
Today by quitting early.
Yeah,
we're here early, start early, quit early. It's only fair, Melody.
That's the way of the new working rules. All right, gold today. The new work ethics. Gold today was up 380 today. Came back a little bit, 1331. Silver is up a few pennies today, 10 cents at $17.95. Platinum was down 2 at 992. Palladium had a good day today, up 22 at $958. The USDX today up down 0.01 at 91.92, with crude oil also trading down a few cents, 48.22. And I can only imagine that the paper markets, I didn't follow them today, just sidetracked with so much other things going on. We have the Dow, yeah, it was up 61 points at 22,118. The NASDAQ was up 22 points at 6,454. And the S&P was up 8, 2,496. 10-year yield, that's beginning to come back, 2.17%, up 0.05. Euro is holding 120. It was up just a few basis points, 0.03. And Japan was big overnight, up a little over 1%. And hey, the world is just fine again. I don't know why. I have no idea why we were seeing a little bit of fear in these markets, Al, when the fear was gripping below, 30. The hurricanes weren't even an issue at that point in time. So, but hey, it's a new day, a new dollar, and a new world. So it's
maybe it
time
was
to get
Halloween
happy.
Halloween is just next month or two.
maybe, who knows? But here's some interesting news. You know, it's lots of times I know of, like, when wholesalers go bad, gold and silver wholesalers go bad, and you know, there was one in Florida who went bad, and you know, he got 6 months in jail, even though he, you know, had a, stole to the tune of, I think, close to $40 or $80 million. Here you have, I think everybody knows the Bates family. Larry Bates, Chuck Bates, I was fighting them.
Are they the ones that ran the motel in that Hitchcock film?
No, but they...
Different film.
Different
family. Different.
Okay. They probably ran one of the biggest Ponzi schemes in gold and silver. They used their religious belief. He was a self-proclaimed, you know, doctor of economists. I mean, it was just, but you know what? People fell for them, hook, line, and sinker. And between 2007 and 2013, customers gave more than $87 million. And probably the majority of them never got their product. But, oh, they ran a Christian radio network. They created the International Radio Network, IRN. They had other monies that were diverted to trading and commodities. They built a 10,000-square-foot house, which is really kind of little compared to some when they take that kind of money. But they did have 300 acres in Tennessee. And still other customers' monies, of course, were used to fulfill prior orders that they couldn't fill. And so the whole family, or the majority of them, get to go to jail. And it looks like, let me see if I can find their criminal time here. Finally, hey, if you steal in the paper market, you don't go to jail. You can have the biggest LIBOR rate scandal in the history of finance. Maybe one person goes to jail, a couple $1 million fines. But when it comes to gold and silver, and this is the kind of sentences that these people should have. Chuck Bates was sentenced to 262 months imprisonment. That's about, what, 21 years? I think his son, Larry Bates, he was convicted on all 46 counts in the indictment. I think he gets 151 months of imprisonment. And they are ordered to pay. Chuck Bates was ordered to pay $19 million. And Larry Bates, I believe, was $21 million he was ordered to pay. So, you know.
Is that payment to the judge or to the prosecutor? Who gets that payment?
To the people. Back to the people. Reimbursement. Restitution. The one wife, I believe, Kinsey Brown Bates, was sentenced to 63 months imprisonment with a $9.5 million in restitution. And so this is what should happen to any criminal that steals people's money. But there's a lot of
even politicians.
These are also other, you know, we talked yesterday about Monex defrauded thousands of customers out of $290 million. There's been people all over the place, and that's why when people come to me and say, well, I can buy this a little bit cheaper pricer than yours, I say beware. Some people might make out, but ultimately, you know, you can't sell product at wholesale. You just can't sell product at wholesale. If it's too good to be true, it usually is. Although I don't think they sold product at wholesale. Chuck and Larry Bates, they sold a lot of rare coins, I believe, and that was where their main focus was on. But hey, they preached the gospel. You know, it's really hard to say someone preaching the gospel is a crook. And any of those who...
You haven't watched TV Evangelism, have you?
Have you seen and remember The Truth Seeker? Can't even remember his name anymore. The Truth Seeker was on shortwave. Took people to the tune of, you know, he's in jail, sitting in jail. So
you think he found the truth?
Who knows? But Al, I mean, this is serious, Al. I mean, it's not to be made light of. I mean, these people really fall into, and yes, people need to take responsibility on their own, but I'm here trying to warn them. You're not going to find, and usually those who have the biggest voice, those who have the biggest, the most resources and the biggest voice are the ones that you have to watch out for.
Why do you think that is?
Because they're brilliant con people.
Why do you think they are so successful at conning people?
They're psychopathic liars.
No, it's not just that.
They're con people. They're crooks.
No, the problem goes back to the people themselves. Most people are more interested in finding a leader that they can follow than they are in discovering information and truth. And if you're prepared to stand up and speak in a way that everyone's, oh, inspire public confidence, if you're willing to do that, they'll follow you right off a cliff like a bunch of lemmings.
Yeah, but we've also...
And people that speak with enormous confidence, they can make enormous sales, they can make enormous cons, but it's taking advantage of people's inclination to look for a leader rather than a source of information.
They look for their weaknesses, they're predators. Mm. And you made me lose my train of thought there, but I mean, it's they look for the predators. I mean, they are predators. They look for, you know, people's weaknesses, and they use that. I understand predators. You know, I get them. And so it's very important. I mean, someone called me one day, said, Melody, I never thought I could be conned. He says, I'm smarter than that. He says, and I know what they do and how they do it. He says, but I was conned. And he was ashamed and he was embarrassed. But he wanted to share that with me so I could share it with the listeners. So it doesn't happen to you. And he says, I really didn't think I'd be conned. He says, I listened to you. And he says, I know. He says, I get it. He says, I was conned. Silver has to go to $50 before he breaks even. And these are TV people, commercials, gold and silver dealers that advertise on TV. And, you know, people think they're big dealers. They think that because they're a big dealer that they're safe. And they're saying, well, you know, maybe I have to pay a little more, but, you know, that's okay because they're big. I'm not going to get taken. And they're the ones that do.
So now another he's a long-term investor.
So another gentleman put $200,000 in an IRA in those 1.5-ounce coins, silver coins. How many times have I told you to stay away from those? He gets a statement and shows his portfolio was valued at $100,000.
And he put how much into it?
$200,000. And what they told him was, well, they're commemorative coins and your IRA won't value them at commemorative coin prices. They'll only value them at the silver price. I said, okay, let's just take your silver price and figure out how many more ounces you could have purchased if you would have just purchased silver rounds. And he would have had, 6,000 more ounces? And it's people aren't used to breaking things up and looking at things to where they can actually see what's right and what's wrong. Sometimes they can become very confusing, and that's the whole part of how these people will, you know, you feel that they know more than you, so people don't ask questions. They just go along and shake their head and say, where do I sign? And it's and in the gold business, it's not regulated. That's why people talk about confiscation. I don't think they'll confiscate gold. I think they'll regulate it. How they'll regulate it, I don't know yet. Because we haven't gotten to that point. But this industry is not regulated. So anybody and their brother can come into it. And that's what we've seen. And there's two things that move markets, fear and greed. And certainly gold has that aspect of you know, both. And so that's what they use. They use the fear, then they use the greed, and there you are. And gold is so important to have in your portfolios. And these new people, and I think the industry has changed since the Great Recession. You have a lot of these Wall Street traders come into the market. People in the 90s, this is the same people that in the 90s, they were telling you not to buy silver. That's when you should have been buying it. But they're only selling it because now they know that's where the market's going, and they're capitalizing on the mindset of what people experienced in 2008. So, but it turns a lot of people off. It's easy to make people become scared of gold and silver, think that they're going to get taken because you have all these, you know, all these crooks in the gold market. Well, call Discount Gold and Silver, and you don't have to worry about it. On Thursday, we didn't talk about this. We should have, but there was a huge trader or a huge option trade. Was Thursday's biggest option trade, and one of Thursday's biggest option trade. A large number of bullish calls were purchased on the iShares Silver Trust, which is better known by its ticker symbol SLV. Specifically, 19,500 25 strike call options that expire in January 2019 appear to have been purchased for 0.47 cents per share. Since each option contract controls 100 shares, the total cost of the trade was $916,000. So someone is betting big. Now, yes, it could be some sort of a firm that's holding a large amount in stocks, and they might have purchased this option as some sort of insurance policy or, you know, something to offset the paper trades that they have. But still, someone is betting big in the silver market that we're going to have a pretty big rise in silver in the next year. And it doesn't take that trade to show me that we are going to see some big moves in the gold and silver market in the next year. But it just confirms what we talk about. So it's a great buy to be buying your silver product right now.
And they're anticipating, and the reason it's a great buy now is because someone is anticipating someone who may know what they're talking about and has enough money to be credible is implying there's going to be a big increase in the price of silver within the next 12, 18 months.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's... it's someone that's hedging their portfolio. I wouldn't hedge my portfolio with silver, so I'm assuming this person would already have gold and that they're adding silver as an additional hedge. If I was hedging my paper portfolio, I would first do it by gold and silver, but with gold being my main primary hedge. But and again, it's the fundamentals, folks. That's what keeps you from getting scammed. If you stick to the fundamentals, you can't go wrong, and you have a true understanding of what gold and silver does for your portfolio. So, what's next, Al?
Well, we've got about 2 minutes until it's time for a commercial, Melody.
Okay, so what's next?
Well, I don't know if I've got anything that can shoehorn into 2 minutes, but we'll try. Here's something from Miss Shedlock. It says, 3 massive bubbles in 17 years. When will this one bust? A 60% decline coming? John Hussman presents a message no one wants to hear because nearly everyone is too busy believing for the third time in 17 years that it's different this time. According to Hussman, the markets are so overvalued that he now expects a 60% decline from here. When one examines the previous collapses in the tech bubble and the housing bubble, It's evident that one of the central elements of those collapses was the gradual recognition by investors that the overvalued pieces of paper they were holding were temporarily glorious and impressive on the surface, backed by much less than investors had imagined was there. They're just selling and telling you what we've been talking about for, you know, years, I guess. I don't know how long. The point is, do you want a payment? Do you want a promise to pay? The pieces of paper are all promises to pay. All right? All of them. Got a piece of paper, got a stock, got a bond, got a bank account, got a pension fund. If you're holding a piece of paper, you are holding a promise to pay. And the day is coming when people are going to realize, oh my gosh, we can't, the people that are made those promises can't keep them. And that means the piece of paper is overvalued. I got a piece of paper that says $100,000. Yay! I'm a relatively rich guy. I've got a piece of paper. No, you don't. All you got is an IOU of a promise to pay. You don't have a payment. And Mr. Hussman, in this particular article, is essentially advocating that same. He's pointing out that same phenomena. Don't put your faith in paper. Huh? Get a payment. Get a gold coin. Get a silver coin. We're going to take a break for a couple commercials. Melody will and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interest of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CommonSenseRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hello, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. What's next, Melody?
You done dancing, Al?
Well, I still had more on that article that I can deal with if we want to. But the point is, you know, this guy Hussman, he says it's different. People think this bubble is not going to be like the tech bubble, and it's not going to be like the housing bubble. This time it's different. No, it's not. It's not. It's going to be the same thing. We're going to have the same incredible result, and people are going, oh, no, how could this happen? For the third time. You know, that's his point. People are beguiled by the opportunity, beguiled to the point of being blinded, the opportunity to make an easy dollar. All right? This motivates people to speculate on Bitcoin, speculate in the stock market, go any place where it looks like, look, but look how much money they're making right now. There's a difference between that and investing. You're taking a longer-term view when you invest. You're relying on fundamentals more than the momentary hype in the markets. And as long as it's human nature to think this time it's different, it's like Bitcoin. Yeah, they're making fabulous. I mean, good God, money they're making in Bitcoin. It's just hard to believe. It's astonishing, but it is hard to believe. And what do they tell you? If it's too good to be true, chances are it's not true. But no, this time it's different. It'll be different with Bitcoin. It'll be different with the current bubble that we're seeing in the stock market. No, it won't. It'll be the same thing, and people are going to get hurt, and they're going to lose a bunch of their wealth, and they're going to cry and moan and groan, and somebody's got to do something about this. Well, who's going to do something about it? You know, you have to do something yourself about it. It's not up to other people to protect you, as much as we would all like that. It's ultimately up to each of us to protect ourselves, and that means we have to make wise and prudent decisions. And it's not just on what you invest in. You make wise and prudent decisions on whether you're going to have a six-pack after work or you're going to have two six-packs after work. You know, there's points where you just say, look, this is not the best choice you can make. And we all of us have to get in the habit of just making better choices, or trying to at least. And so here's a guy, you know, it's different this time. No, it's not. No, it's not. He goes on and he talked about the overvalued pieces of paper, Ponzi scheme. He says, what will stop a Ponzi scheme? And only the discovery of the reality behind it. The recognition that there is no there. All right? In other words, people are making promises that back up these, that seemingly support the Ponzi schemes, but in the end, they're promising things that they can't deliver, and they can't possibly make good on their promises. And when people find out that they can't make good on their promises, that's when they find out, oh my gosh, this piece of paper I have where he promised to send me $100,000 or whatever, or stock or whatever, bonds or whatever, the promise can't be kept. I'm not going to get $100,000 worth. I might get $50,000 worth. I might get $5,000 worth, but I'm not going to get worth, but I'm not going to get what I was promised. And this is going to come to as a shock to a lot of people. But this article, this talk about John Hussman, he's talking about, well, this is the third bubble we're in 17 years. This isn't like we have to look back to the 1600s to see the tulip mania in Holland to see a similar situation. You know, we don't have to go back, get an archaeologist to dig through the ruins of some ancient civilization, say, oh my gosh, they had a bubble. No, this goes on. This is going on right in this country. We've had two already in the last 17 years. Love me more. And I don't know what to say. You know, it really is. It's sad. It's laughable. Human nature is flawed. You know, it's for all of us. Mine is too. You know, I'm not. This is the pot calling the kettle black. But we can get into. We have a talent, an appetite for trouble. And you can get into it in stocks and bonds. You can get into it with members of the opposite sex. You can get into it with, I don't know, the dogs, the cats you have for pets, the size of your home. There's a bunch. But we have an opportunity, an appetite for trouble that is, we're going to get what we're looking for. A lot of us. And really, we would be more sensible if we settled for a smaller home, less expensive car. Saved our wealth in a form that is likely to survive. In the end, there's a real problem. There's an opportunity to be prudent, and if you're going to be prudent, you're going to be dull. Prudence is dull. It's the sort of thing where instead of going out there and lighting a cigar with a $100 bill, you prudently decide, no, I'm not going to smoke, and I'm certainly not going to light any cigars or pipes or cigarettes with $100 bills. I'm not even going to smoke. And if you can get into that mentality, you eventually get to a mentality where you begin to realize, you know, it actually is prudent to save. Save. Not spend, not consume, save. And ultimately, your savings will create an opportunity for you to make some fabulous purchases.
And, of course, that savings, the best way to make that savings is through gold and silver.
Yeah, I think so.
It truly is. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about our debt and everything, Al, and I saw an article. There was a couple of guys that were interviewed on CNBC, and here they are talking about China and, oh, you know, with their debt and so forth. I'm thinking, but they won't dare touch the United States and talk about our debt. But the Chinese National Congress is set to meet in mid-October. And some predict the session will have a wide-reaching implications for global markets and the economy. Discussions around the growth of the country's debt in recent years will be particularly consequential. One critical thing to watch is to see how they rebalance their economy over the course of the last 5 years. You've actually seen non-financial debt in China increase by roughly $14 trillion, which is pretty close to 90 to 100% growth. That growth rate is not sustainable. And this is from some guy on CNBC, Chad Morganlander. He says, this apparent mountain of debt has created financial fragility across China. He said, and the country's Communist Party would like to decelerate that growth rate. Unfortunately, that rebalancing does have major implications on U.S. markets and foreign markets. China began scaling back measures that support the Chinese yuan following its rally this year against the U.S. dollar. My question is, here he's talking about China rebalancing their economy, rebalancing, trying to, you know, withdraw some of that debt. And it's like, why is this such a serious situation? And yet when we look here at home, we're far worse.
Well, that's part of the diversion.
Yes.
You know, instead of dealing with our own problems, there's a verse in the Bible that says, why do you talk about getting the sliver out of the other guy's eye while you've got a plank in your own eye? Get your own act straightened out, and then come tell everybody else how to live.
Why would China?
Not many of us are inclined to do that.
Why would China's debt be any different than ours?
No, I know. Well, because it's smaller. We're in deeper trouble than the Chinese are, but don't talk about that. Now, the problem is in Peking. We're okay in Washington, D.C., but Peking, they have a serious debt problem. We're all right. They're not.
Then there was this other guy that was on there talking about the same thing, and he says they're doing China. They're doing things to try to tweak their trade relationship with the U.S., but more importantly, their newfound strength globally, both economically and, as you see, militarily in the South China Seas, all is based on their belief in their economic strength. Again, what is our economic strength? The belief that we're strong. The belief, I don't know. It's just.
And the trick is to convince others to absorb it, to share in that belief. Mm-hmm. I mean, part of what we see, part of the con artists arsenal of tricks and tools and whatever is to create the image that he's a very successful guy. And people want to be around successful people. If he can make you believe that he is a very successful guy, then you're more likely to do what he says. Right? If he thinks he comes across that, no, he's a poor person, he's a pauper. Well, who's going to listen to that? Not many. At least not at the time. You know, they might listen over a period of years, but initially, we're looking for somebody with an expensive suit and a tie tack that's got a $2,000 diamond on it, and we'll take advice from him.
Well, that's why those confidence
reports. Even though it's
a
cubic zirconium tie tack. But
why,
it's human nature.
That's why those confidence reports are so important. You know, it's just a matter of belief that things.
And what
hey,
is a con? And what when we talk about a con artist or a con game, what are we talking about? We're talking about a confidence artist, a confidence game. That's what a con game is. That's what a con artist is. Someone or something that inspires false confidence. They tell you about the dollar. They say the dollar is based on the full faith and trust of the American people. That's where the fiat dollar gets its value. So Federal Reserve has admitted this. Full faith and credit of the American people. That's what makes the dollar valuable. How stupid is that? They're telling you that's the truth of it, but that if there is no faith or credit in the dollar, it's worthless. And this is consistent with how do you redeem them. In the past, if you had a checking account, and I came to your business, I have a checking account, I come to your business, you sell flat screen TVs. I want to buy one. I give you a check for $1,000 for the flat screen TV. You give me the flat screen TV. I leave and go home to watch television. Have you been paid? And the answer is no. You haven't been paid until, at least as this banking system operated up to a few years ago, you haven't been paid until, one, you deposit my check into your bank account. Your bank takes my check and sends it over to my bank. My bank looks at my banking account to see if I've actually got $1,000 to cover it. And if I do, then they take the $1,000 out of my account, send it back to your bank, and your bank puts it into your account, and now you've been paid. You've been paid from the account of the person who actually purchased the flat-screen TV. Right? It used to be that banks would issue their own gold certificates. And you might have one in your wallet. And if you walked into a local bank and said, here's a gold certificate for $100, I want $100 worth of gold. Give me 5 ounces or whatever they had at the time. All right, they would give you the 5 ounces and send that gold certificate back to the bank that issued it. And the bank that issued it would have to send 5 ounces of gold to the local bank that redeemed their gold certificate. The point is, if you buy something, it has to be charged to you. If you write one of these pieces of paper, you're the guy who it should come out of your account when it comes time to redeem the value of that piece of paper. What happens with Federal Reserve notes, which we use for cash in our wallets right now? Who redeems those? Federal government issues them. The Federal Reserve issues them. Which one of those can you go to redeem and say, well, I would like to redeem my Federal Reserve note? They don't redeem your Federal Reserve notes. The most they'll do is they issue them, but they don't redeem them. You go in there and say, I got a $100 Federal Reserve note. I'd like $100 worth of silver or something. No. The only thing they'll do is give you a fresh $100 bill. That's all. How do you redeem your note? Recognizing that a piece of paper is just a promise to pay, and the papers, who signed the notes? Got the Secretary of the Treasury, and I don't know who all signs all the, but there's at least two signatures on your Federal Reserve notes. These are the people that are promising to pay, promising to redeem, but they don't. Well, the way you redeem your Federal Reserve note is if I gave you $1,000 cash for that flat screen TV, you go out and find one of your neighbors, and you use $1,000 to buy his old bass boat. Or maybe a bicycle, or who knows what you use it. But you, one of your neighbors will give you something tangible that is a payment rather than a promise to pay. One of your neighbors or people in the community, or send it to Amazon and they'll send you some stuff in boxes in the mail. It is up to the public to redeem the government's pieces of paper. And that's exactly what they're talking about when they say the stuff is backed by the full faith and credit of the American people. But the point is, the government and or Federal Reserve are writing these pieces of paper, just like I can write a check to pay for the flat screen TV, but it doesn't come out of their account. All they have to do is print up the paper, and then if I accept that paper, I have to find somebody out on the street who's willing to give me something tangible for my piece of paper, for the promise to pay that the federal government should be paying and or the Federal Reserve should be paying. How? By redeeming with gold and silver. Walk into the bank, say, I've got a Federal Reserve note for $100, I want silver. Okay. Should be okay, or at least that's the way it was up until we went completely to a complete fiat currency. Now, you and I are redeeming the government's debts. You know, do you realize how fabulously wealthy I could be if everybody else was redeeming my debts? All I had to do was write a check, and I never had to redeem it on my account. I could not only buy the flat-screen TV for $1,000, I could buy a new Mercedes-Benz, I could buy a Rolls-Royce, I can buy a mansion, I can buy a county, I can buy a state, I can buy a government. Nobody redeems my checks. That's where the government is. It's not a surprise that the government grows large and oppressive. It never has to pay its own debts. It just hands out these pieces of paper and let the great unwashed scuffle among themselves to see who's going to pay the government's debts. So I don't know if that's easily understood or people are following what I'm saying here, but it is just wrong. It's wrong. Whoever issues those notes has to pay for them. The same as if I write that check for $1,000 for the flat screen TV and give it to you in your little store. You can't charge everybody else in the country for my flat screen TV. I got the flat screen TV. It's got to be charged to my account. Something tangible has to come out of my account. It can't be just another piece of paper, another cryptocurrency or something like that. Something's tangible. Tangible is a payment. Intangible paper, that's just a promise to pay. And, you know, we harp on it on a regular basis on this program, but it's important, I think, that you learn the difference between a payment and a promise to pay. Coming into difficult times, if the only thing you've got stored up and saved up are promises to pay, you're going to be in a position analogous to people in the South at the end of the Civil War, or at the end of the Civil War, where they had Confederate dollars. They were saving them. They thought they'd be able to spend them. No, they were just promises to pay. And ultimately, they wound up losing their assets. If you want a payment, get some gold, get some silver, get a flat screen TV, but get something tangible. Beware of the paper. I'm going to take a break for a couple of announcements, commercials. Melody and I will be right back on Financial Survival. Please stay tuned. Won't you lay it on the line? I need to hear it just one more time. Oh, won't you tell me again? Oh, can you feel it? Oh, won't you tell me again?
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today day, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231. And the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. What's next, Melody?
Well, these numbers just came out. I picked them up. The middle class income hit highest level on record in 2016. Well, that's great. That really is great. You know, it's about time income began to rise for the middle class. Why are you laughing, Melody? Let me tell you. Median household income in America was $59,039 last year. 60 grand is, you know. But anyway, surpassing the previous record of 58,655 set in 1999. So this year, $384. It took almost 20 years to get $384. I mean, it just kind of shows you that everything in all those good times during those few years and so forth, it's just a bunch of lies.
Illusions. It's like the stock market, Melody. You know, it just keeps on going up and up and up. And yay. Everyone is excited about the stock market going up. What's the reality here, folks?
Let me finish this. It says that this is from the U.S. Census Bureau that reported today. The uptick in earnings occurred because so many people found full-time jobs or better-paying jobs last year. America's poverty rate fell to 12.7%, the lowest since 2007, the year before the financial crisis hit. The percent of Americans without health insurance for the entire year also dropped in 2016 to just 8.8%. That's the lowest ever, largely thanks to expanding coverage under the Affordable Care Act. So while that's dropping to 8.8%, the lowest ever, that means our health insurance premiums will probably rise accordingly. more people are getting on the insurance program under that Affordable Care Act. But what is so affordable about your health insurance premiums when they're being raised 60% a year? So, I mean, it's just, you've got to be kidding me. And yet this is hailed as great news, as the evidence of a recovery is finally taking hold after years of frustration for the middle class.
Does it inspire your confidence, Melody?
Oh, extremely so.
Well, then you are a candidate for, if there's any con artists or con games out there, Melody has just had her confidence boosted, and that means she's susceptible to being conned.
But what they're talking about, no, I'm not susceptible to being conned, Alan. You shouldn't even... I know you are. This is a really great report card on what the Obama administration has accomplished. This is what's going to be coming from the Democrats. Oh, you know. And now it's Trump's job to make sure these incomes just keep going up and poverty keeps going down during his tenure. Well, you know what? It's going to be really hard for Trump to do that, considering most of those numbers on that report card are false. So it's kind of hard to...
What's interesting to me about that report... How is it that we have about 12%, if I recall what you said correctly, about 12% of the people are living in poverty, but only about 4.5% of the people are unemployed?
Well, because they can be employed, but they just don't make enough to get them out of the poverty level.
I understand that, but I'm just saying, if you're in poverty because you are at least significantly unemployed, I think your numbers ought to be showing up on the unemployment list as well as the poverty list. There's an 8% difference between how many are unemployed and how many are impoverished.
Yesterday there was a big talk, the food stamps are going down. It's the lowest in blah, 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 so many years with only 41.2. It's like, excuse me, 41 million Americans are on food stamps? That's the problem. It isn't that it's dropped by maybe a half a million or, a, you know, 0.8 million or whatever the numbers were. I'm just recalling the numbers from a report we talked about earlier today. 41 million people are on food stamps still? It's a disgrace to this country.
Well, it's just another one of those leaves in the breeze that's telling us, look, you know, the moment is coming. And nobody knows if it's going to be tomorrow or a couple of years from now, but it really does look like it's a lot closer.
But just shows how
we've seen in the last, just in the last few weeks, we've seen an increase in the chaos, the confusion, and even the madness that seems to, you know, be prevalent in our economy right now. And maybe we're right, maybe we're wrong. It really looks like we're getting awfully close to this. And a lot of people agree, close to a, you know, a significant decline. You know, we're just reading from one article that was published by Ms. Shedlock, where John Hussman is predicting something like a 60% decline in the stock markets. Any of you got stocks, I hope you're ready to weather that or you get out on time. And it reminds me of another quote that I can't remember clearly. Right? I can't remember who said it. Billionaire. Wall Street billionaire, and they asked him, how is it that he became a billionaire? And he says, I always took my profits too early. Now, what he means by that, he's saying you buy low and you sell high. And when you sell, you collect your profits. And he's saying he always took his profits too soon, and he became a billionaire. What does that mean? It means he did not wait until the price was at the absolute peak, because he couldn't know where that was. And when it gets there and starts to decline, the herd is going to stampede for the door and almost nobody's going to get out. He took his profits early. He took his profits too soon, and the result was he became a billionaire. Mm-hmm. It's just sensible. All right? He did not succumb to greed. He looked at fundamentals. He said, how high can this go? How high might it go? What's reasonable? What's fair? And if I sell right now, do I make a reasonable profit on my original investment? And if the answer is yes, then go. Sell. All right? If he has reason to believe, look at it. I don't think it's going to go a lot higher. It might keep going for another 6 months, maybe a year. We don't know. But if I took the profit now, do I preserve my profit and then I look for more investments where I can ride it up again, preserve profit, get out early, but preserve the profit? And that was what he is, I can't think of his name, but Wall Street billionaire, and that's how he got to be a billionaire. He took his profits too soon. And it's a tremendous lesson for everybody. If you're investing in anything, you know, there's going to be a time when you're going to want to sell. If you're going to wait for it to go to the peak, Bitcoin, classic example. A lot of people in Bitcoin right now, if they were smart, they would capture their profits and sell now. All right? And they could make fabulous, a lot of them could make fabulous profits. But the high probability is that Bitcoin is going to continue to go up for a while longer, and nobody's going to sell. They're betting that they will have brains enough to spot the peak when they get there. They'll get out, and the rest of them will be trapped. And most of them are going to, it's going to be another, you know, tulip mania. It's going to be, and have a bunch of tulip bulbs sitting in a bucket behind the house and saying, you know, I could have had $100,000. But I had to stay greedy. I was going to hold out to get $110,000 or $120,000. I could have had $100,000. Instead, I've got a bucket of tulip bulbs. So, again, the billionaire, how did he get to be a billionaire? He sold too soon. Took his profits too soon. But he didn't, that by doing that, he didn't suffer any losses. I've seen Warren Buffett talk about this. And Buffett has explained this in a way that I can only vaguely recall, and I should be able to recall better. I don't, but he said basically the same thing. He said, the main thing about investing is don't lose money. All right, whatever you do, don't lose money. Because it's much harder to replace lost money than it is to just take a small profit and keep moving. It's hard to replace what you've lost. And as a result, Buffett is saying, Don't gamble. All right? Get out there and secure your profits. All right? Get those profits. Secure them. Do not gamble. And it's worked well for him. And something along those lines has worked well for this other billionaire. And it's a little bit of suppressing that in for that urge to be greedy. Take the money when you have it. Don't lose money. First order of business for Buffett. Don't lose money. Get in, make something off of it, and as soon as there's any chance that you're going to start losing, capture your profits. Sell it, capture your profits, and move on to the next investment. I think it's a brilliant idea. I don't even know if it qualifies as brilliant. Maybe it is just so much common sense that it's unreasonable to characterize it as brilliant, but, you know,
well,
there
it's
is brilliance in there because...
No.
It is so. It may be common sense, but it is not commonly understood.
No, it's recognizing human nature, and it's just human nature. We say it all the time. It's just human nature. Is, you know, you think something is going to continue to go higher and higher. So it's just a matter of recognizing that, hey, no one will ever pick the top. So you just get out when you think you are at the top, and you take your money and run. It's not any different than playing, you know, the 21. You make your profit, you pull your profit. You don't play with a whole amount in there. And eventually you know when to quit. But, you know, it's just human nature. And that's, you know, when we...
Well, you know, there's another part of the human nature on that. You don't want to be a Bitcoin investor and tell everybody that you sold your Bitcoin when it was $2,500 a coin. Because it's $2,500 a coin, you kind of got $4,000, $5,000. You look like an idiot if you sell too soon. And as long as it's still going up, the people that see you sell, they'll say, well, you're an idiot. Look at what you lost. We don't want to be perceived as idiots by our friends, family, associates, and the rest of that. And so, rather than be sensible and prudent and capture your profit, you want to ride that particular roller coaster all the way to the end. And if you do, you're going to probably lose your assets. All right? But we are embarrassed to sell too soon. And billionaire says, no, he was a secret to his success. He always sold too soon. But in doing so, he captured profits. All right? And then he looked for another investment. And he captured profits on that one. Sold too soon, but he captured profits.
But the thing with gold is you do look at gold a little bit different, you know, because you're not trading gold. Gold is something that you want to hold on to because we understand how it ends. Pardon?
Gold is money. It's not currency. It's not a promise to be paid.
But
it is an actual payment.
But we see... You made me lose my train of thought. That's twice today, I believe. But anyway, gold is not to be traded like paper. It's something that you buy and you hold. And, you know, and Al's right. It is money. And you do hold it. And you're trading those worthless paper dollars into something that's real. Mm-hmm. And you hold on to it. That is your savings account. And I think a lot of these new traders into gold and silver, they treat gold as they would a paper stock. Mm-hmm. I mean, sure, today I talked about, the SLV, the $900,000 deal from last week. That's paper trading. He doesn't own the silver. He owns paper. But it just shows you that, hey, there's someone else out there that's betting $1 million that silver is going to go higher in the next year. And... this is something that we talk about all the time. These are lows. This is when you want to buy them. But even when silver is $30, even when gold is $2,000, is that price going to be viewed as low?
Probably. It'll be low compared to what's likely to be coming.
That's my point. So you can't always just focus on the price. When it comes to gold and silver, it can never go to zero. Like so much of all your paper can go to zero. Gold and silver will never go to zero.
Yep.
Ever. So
again, it's a payment, not a promise to pay. Which would you rather have? If I owe you $1,000, would you rather have $1,000 or would you rather have, and I'm speaking in an analogy, this is a metaphor kind of, but would you rather have $1,000 Or would you accept, would you rather have an IOU with my own signature on it where I owe you $1,000? And boy, wouldn't you be glad to have that? No, you don't want the IOU. And yet that's what we operate on. And those little green pieces of paper in your wallet are nothing but IOUs, except they're not going to be paid by the people who issued them. They owe you, but they're waiting on the guy across the street to make good on their payment. They're waiting on you to make good on somebody else's payment. And we're all doing this. We are playing colossal fools. And we're going to pay a price for that. And if you want to get away from that, you don't want to be one of the people that's caught, made to pay that price, wake up. Understand the difference between a payment and a promise to pay. Get rid of your promises to pay. They're made of paper. It's all you need. Oh, it's almost all you need to know. Is it paper? It's a promise to pay. Is it tangible, physical, gold, silver? That's a payment. Do you want to be paid or do you want to be promised? Which would you rather have? You know, this is the sort of thing that is so obvious and so much common sense, and yet it's virtually invisible to 99% of the American people. They don't get it. They don't think about it. It's like, you know. And because of that, they are in great jeopardy. When it turns out we can't pay, make all the promises, they find out, oh my gosh, we can't pay the debts, we can't keep the promises, the paper is worthless. People who've got gold and silver are going to be cheering. We're out of time, folks. I want to thank all of you for listening. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, the good Lord bless you and me and Melody and our producer, Todd. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Ain't it sad? And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me. That's too bad.